This week on Barbell Shrug, we interview Travis Mash, powerlifting world champion, and former weightlifter.
Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrug. For the video version, go to barbellshrug.com.
All right, welcome to Barbell Shrug. I'm Mike Bletzer here with my co-hosts, Doug Larson and Christopher Moore.
Hi, everybody.
CTP behind the camera. With our guest, Travis Mash.
Glad to be here.
World champion powerlifter, owner of Mash Elite Performance, and
where we are right now.
Runs Mash Mafia weightlifting and powerlifting.
Good job.
Boom, boom, boom.
You recited that three or four times. I was hoping it would come out okay.
Well, I recited it three or four times in my head. I recited it out loud once.
Hey, in all fairness to you, I really think
I'm almost a professional.
I really think you're getting better at this. I think you're really getting good now.
He is getting better at it. If he does the next part.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Oh, yeah. All right, make sure to go over to barbellshrug.com, sign up for the newsletter, and you'll learn the 8 snatch mistakes that you're probably making that are keeping you from hitting giant PRs. Did that work well?
That's all right.
See? Yeah, he's doing better.
Awesome. Yeah.
Practice.
Well done, Michael.
All right, Travis. We're here because you're awesome, pretty much. One of the strongest guys of all time.
Not to oversell you, man. I mean,
please don't let our listeners down.
I don't take myself that seriously. You know, but it's cool. I mean, thanks.
So in what, 04 and 05, you were world champion powerlifter?
Yes, I was.
You went to school, and we just learned that you were a student of Dr. Stone.
I was.
Which we reference in the show every once
Dr.
in a while.
Dr. Michael Stone, currently at Eastern Tennessee.
Yeah.
Eastern Tennessee State.
Tennessee State. Yeah. Him and his wife, Meg.
Meg, who is the baddest chick ever live.
Probably.
Wasn't she like a capable of power cleaning like 315 and shit when her prime?
Yeah.
I'm not joking. The audience may think we're joking about that. That was the real thing.
That's for real. She was a world-class thrower.
She's a thrower. Yeah. Not a weightlifter.
No. She could have done. I mean, she could have been a great, you know, weightlifter too.
Best conversation I ever had with Meg was that we were driving in Dr. Stone's little, like his Jeep.
Right.
You know, going back to his house. I was trying to go to school there for a while. She talked about how, you know, useful things to do. Like, he's like, yeah, at the end of your workout, and that thick Scottish action. She's like, let's do a couple of light, like deadlift sets. Like, you know, maybe I would do like, you know, 300, a couple sets of five or something. Stiff like deadlifts. That's why I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I can't do that shit now.
Yeah. You know, I realized how awesome Dr. Stone was when I first went to Colorado Springs to the OTC, and they referenced him there all the time. And
I'm
like, boom, App State, baby. But of course, now he's not there anymore, so. We're not so cool anymore.
He went from there to University of Edinburgh, was it? I think to start exercise science. He came back to get involved in US scene, and then I think that's when he went to Eastern Tennessee. But for the audience, if you want to study the science of getting strong as shit, Dr. Stone's your man.
I totally agree. I'll plug him right now. Yes, he's the man.
It's hard to read any textbook or research article without seeing something he's done in the references somewhere.
Absolutely.
Just PubMed, Stone Garhammer.
Right.
Get to reading.
For real.
So not only were you a power lifter.
Right.
You were a weightlifter first, which is unusual.
Right.
I mean, I've seen some powerlifters go to weightlifting a little bit, but to see it go the other way around, why'd you do that?
Well, actually, I dabbled in powerlifting. I played college football at App State first.
Okay.
Then I went into a little bit of powerlifting, where I went to actually ended up going to the junior nationals, and I won right away out of the gate. And then back then, there was not like 1,000 federations. There was like maybe 3.
But here comes someone trying to make a smoothie.
So, too bad. Is it really?
Before the show, Charles was like, let's not have smoothies.
He's like, what the hell?
No, that's actually one of my coaches, so it's cool.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And so... So I started in powerlifting.
And it was a very different scene then, right?
It was a different.
It wasn't extreme.
Walked it out.
No equipment.
Weak equipment.
Super suits. Yeah. Basically, it looked like the old school version, like, you know, CrossFit leotards. Like glorified spandex you put on yourself and do your squats.
Right. And so then I did that, and I went to the Junior Worlds and got a silver medal.
Nice.
But then, really, my strength coach, Mike Kent, I don't know if you ever heard of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was awesome. And he told me, you know, I mean, I'm a 5'7" wide guy. He's like, you're not going to go to the NFL, which I already knew. let me be clear. I was not that great a football player.
But I have a dream. I believe in myself.
He's like, too bad.
That's
like,
good, son. That's real good.
Stop believing. Yeah.
So, get rid of your dreams.
Yeah. So he told me to go to Colorado Springs, you know, and maybe try weightlifting. So after I went to the Junior Worlds and did really well, I just really packed up my car. I had $200 in my pocket. literally, and drove to Colorado Springs, where I'd heard about Wes Barnett, the two-time Olympian.
Fuck, was Wes strong, man?
Oh my gosh, dude, the best thing ever in my career. My highlight that you were asking about was being with Wes Barnett.
Oh wow!
So I drove there, $200. My mom was like, "Good luck. I'll see you in a month. There's no way you're gonna survive it." So, yeah.
You got a whole lot of heroes. Now, Travis.
For real. So I drove to Colorado Springs.
It's probably good you got out of town.
Yeah. So, and then went straight, before I unpacked my car, I went straight to the gym where he was training. It was World Gym in 8th Street, off of 8th Street in Colorado Springs. Mm-hmm. Went there and met him. He happened to be there. So, before I went to my apartment or anything, I saw him. I was like, "Look, man, I just drove thousands of miles. You've got to train me." You know, I had to look like crazy. I drove 23 hours straight. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no. So I was like, I bet my hair was all wild out.
Young, dumb, and passionate.
Seriously.
Yeah. You had to talk to this guy on the phone before you showed up? You just drove 24 hours for no reason?
I just drove there. I just said,
"That's what it takes, man.
Yep. That's balls.
That's what it takes."
Yeah. I just drove there, and then he's like, "Calm down, son. I'll train you."
Take it easy, man.
Yeah, and then I met the owner of the gym, and he's like, "You need a job." I'm like, "Yes." And so
the universe rewarded you kindly for the risk.
The pieces just fell in place.
Within 30 minutes, I had my coach, I had a job, and I was off and running.
What was the most impressive lift you ever saw?
I just want to say this real quick. If you show up in my gym and don't call first and looking for a job,
I will shit on your dream.
It's not happening.
I will shit all over your dream.
You should probably just keep driving to the next town.
Yeah.
Just so the audience has some context, what's the most impressive thing you ever saw Wes do? But with a barbell.
Well, you know, one of them. He was phenomenal with like snatch grip push presses. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, like he gets snatch grip push press 220 kilos or more. He battled Mark Henry. You guys know who that is?
Yeah, Mark was, everybody thinks Mark next to Shane is like the strongest American to live.
Yes, yes.
He's legit. I mean, Mark was the strongest guy I've ever, like Stone said, I think one time, you looked at his wrist and you realized he was just not like you.
Right.
His joint structure and everything. He said that about Shane too. Shane too. Hips and knees weren't human hips and knees.
It's totally true. But he beat Mark Henry. You know, Wes beat Mark Henry at that movement. And
And he was like a 105?
108 back then.
108. Okay, so he wasn't a very huge guy.
No,
like Mark was like 380 pounds or 350 pounds,
maybe
or
400.
So and I think Wes had like ridiculous squat strength too. I mean, everything was just like freaky.
Oh, he's a freakish athlete, you know. Whereas Mark and Shane, well, Shane's a great athlete too, but Mark Henry is just big and strong. Wes was super athletic. He was all state in Missouri, and actually got Mr. Basketball of the state of Missouri. Like, so he had college scholarships for basketball, and so he's like, "No, I want to weightlift."
Wow. Did he take
drafts? That makes no sense.
Yeah. I've never heard anyone say that.
I don't think he ever medaled in the Olympics, but he
took sixth.
Yeah, that's really good. I mean, he was in the heat of it. Like, it's still a really heavy drug culture and international competition. He's right in the mix.
Dude, a lot of people used to say, even the Europeans would say, he has to be taking,
Like, I don't believe you.
Yeah. They're like, they didn't think it was possible that a man could, at 108, could clean and jerk 220. But he did it. But I know he wasn't. Like, I became close friends with him, and we actually talked about it. Because, let's be serious. I came from the powerlifting world, and so that was a big thing, drugs. I was used to a lot of the...
It's just common. It would be weird if you didn't do it.
It's ubiquitous and ever-present.
Right. So, but with Wes, I was like, have you ever even considered? And he's like, I'm not going to lie. I've thought about it. Because obviously he would have medaled, if not, gold medaled. And he's like, but all these young kids that look up to me, he's like, if I take that, I won't be able to look them in the eye.
And say work hard,
Right. So,
not that those guys aren't working really hard, but like you're dealing with kids to be doing that and know it and then tell them something else.
Right.
You can live with it, good for you, but I would never do that. I
mean, right. Me too.
I know Kendrick must share that same frustration now, because Kendrick's another guy. Like, I told him at the party we were at that couple months ago, like, you're fucking strong, man. I mean, it's frustrating to know that if you were on the same playing field, wink, wink, with these dudes, you would just fucking beat all their asses.
Yeah.
It's probably true. He would just crush them, probably.
I mean, he would
just
be
so athletic, man.
I don't know about crush them, but
he'd be right in the mix. Yeah. So I'm getting a little excited. I like Kendrick so much, and I believe in him.
Right, me too.
But he would be right in the mix, man.
Yes. He would definitely 100% medal.
Seeing him squat and lift, I'm like, you would be there.
Yes.
That sucks, because he's giving it all he's got. you know, it's not, it's the fairest thing in the world, but it is what it is. I'm happy that we have guys who are getting there anyway, despite that huge disadvantage of getting there anyway.
What is his top place in the Olympics? Does anybody know?
Eighth, I think.
Yeah.
So he's right 85. There in that pocket.
You know? So he's moved up to 94 now. So I'm interested. I think if he can get his snatch up,
that'll be
a game changer for him.
If he had a John North snatch with that clean and jerk.
Exactly.
You know, now you have a battle right there.
Strength-wise, though, he's not inferior to anybody in the world in his weight class, I don't think.
Without a doubt.
Damn.
Like when you put, like, say, John versus Kendrick just being strong, like, there's no match.
Kendrick's one of those guys. When you look at Kendrick, you're like, that guy's not built like a normal human being.
No.
Genetically
he goes up a weight class, and he's shredded. It's like,
shredded.
Who goes up a weight class, and then, like, as soon as they hit that next weight class, you can still see their abs or their singles.
I know. You know what I love about Kendrick
make any sense.
And Jared, you know, that crew.
Pancakes. In
Louisiana State, you know, or, I mean, Shreveport.
Yeah.
They're jacked. They do a lot of strength training.
Under Dr. Kyle, man. A Stone student.
Yeah. Shout out to Stone, man. Is this the Stone show or what?
Well, it should be it.
We need to get him on the show eventually.
We can easily make that happen.
We could probably make that happen.
Oh, he's really cool.
All right, mark your calendars, folks. I guess we're committing to that, kind of.
East Tennessee State, yes.
Another road trip.
East Tennessee State is an awesome little community. Have you guys been there at Johnson City?
Yeah. Been there a couple times.
Went to a competition not too long ago.
He's got a whole complex there.
Yeah, University Nationals was there this past year, and we had some athletes go. It was a great time. It was a great meet.
Yeah, I actually got to interview Kendrick Ferris while we were there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. For the very first time. It was cool. We were up in the stadium. We had, like, all the weightlifting going on down below us in the background.
For context, next to... At that university...
Episode what?
55.
Episode 55.
At that university, next to the medical school, I think Dr. Stone's department and his resources is the biggest department in that whole school.
It's unbelievable. I mean, I'm so jealous.
For young students who want to learn weightlifting, want to learn exercise science, you should go there.
Right.
Just go. Do what Trav did. Pack your fucking shitty little Buick.
And just say, Dr.
Take
Stone.
Take $200. Yeah. Tell your mom, thanks for shitting on my dreams, and get out of here.
For real. So, I remember calling my mom.
Sure, your mom was a nice lady, sorry.
No, she's super nice. But, I mean, think about it. Like, what are the odds of a guy taking $200 and surviving in Colorado Springs, you know, thousands of miles away from North Carolina, where they're from, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, in her defense, I was
just being realistic. On the flip side of that, you were showing what people need to realize, what I'm only now learning at coming up on age of 33, and you guys all agree now, like, the fear and the perceived risk on the forefront, if you're feeling that, if you're a young lifter who's like, should I pull the trigger on this? Like, the risk is actually way lower than you think.
It
just
really
jump
is.
On the other side of the fence. Get out there. Be smart. Educate yourself, but go for it, man.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong is going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, just go for it.
You just have to leave everything behind. I think that...
Yeah.
I mean, it's actually not that big of a deal.
It's really not.
Is that why you're buying an Airstream? You pulling a Matt Chan soon?
Yeah, yeah. No, but I'm a big fan of, like, what's going on here?
I have no idea.
It sounds like there's a thunderstorm rolling.
It
in.
Does. Sounds like it sounds like all of a sudden got
now.
Windy.
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Was that an earthquake?
I think we just experienced the first North Carolina earthquake.
If it happens, tell me.
We had a big earthquake last year.
Really?
Yeah, we really did.
Oh, I mean, really?
Big-ish. Like, big-ish. It shook the house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
No idea.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Is there an earthquake going on, or have I had too many fingers of scotch? I can't tell anymore.
Yeah, but I don't think it's that big of it. You know, I think every young person should get out of their hometown. You know, I did it. I went in the Navy.
Yeah.
And look how you turned out.
I turned out just fine. Some people may argue a little weird.
But good. I mean, you pay your bills on time.
Yeah, but I think if you just pick up and go, you know, it can change your life for the better. You don't know who you are until you leave town.
What do you have to lose, really? So it doesn't work out. Go back home.
No big deal. And if you wake up one day and you find yourself like, wow, I'm feeling really optimistic. Like, I believe in myself. Good for you, first of all. And if you find yourself going, all my friends and family seem to be really shitting on me right now. Like, they don't really feel like they want me to succeed at this. You got to be willing to say, you know, I'm moving on to greener pastures.
I totally agree.
Not leaving your family behind, but you got to surround yourself with people who go, you know, you can be a great fucking lifter. You can be a great businessman. You can be a great anything.
Well,
come hang out with us.
Most 18-year-olds don't have somebody depending on them. And that's the perfect time to, you know, take your chance.
Go find the people who you want to be like.
Right.
At that one time, just go to them and learn from them.
That's
immerse yourself in them.
How long were you in Colorado Springs?
About 3 years the first time. You know, I spent about a year and a half under Wes, and then I was invited to Olympic Training Center by Dragomir, and then my father got lung cancer, and so I moved home.
Man.
Yeah, and so it was terminal, and so I wanted to be with him, and so, you know, you know, that's the only could've, should've in my life. I can honestly say I will die with no could've or should've but that one. But really, it's a could've or should've that I'm okay with, because, you know, my dad and I spent those last few months of his life communicating for the first time openly. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, there was no bull crap between us. It was just, here's the way I feel, here's the way he felt. You know, my mother was married three times, and so, you know, I think there was a lot of, you know, I had certain stepdads come into my life that were, you know, had lots of money and they're very influential, and my dad was just a blue collar, hardworking dude. So I think there was times where I might have been intrigued by these new guys more,
right,
and it might have hurt my dad's feelings. But then I just wanted to tell him that the hardest thing, guys, it took me months to say, look, Dad, I love you. You were the best dad in the world, and none of these dudes mattered at all.
Man, yeah, you're actually hitting home pretty close, because my dad passed away on Thanksgiving,
and I
didn't really get that.
Yeah,
what? It's weird that once you're, for all those people listening, if you got your parents who are, if you kind of know there's not much time, you got to have that moment with them. Because I didn't get that. I mean, my dad was like, you're a hardworking dude.
Yeah.
So like, he actually lived what most people, if you call yourself a Christian, he's actually doing it. He is stripped down, right, bare bones. He's living like a Zen hobbit.
Right.
But he always
Zen hobbit.
Zen hermit. Hermit.
I like Zen hobbit better.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Somebody's gonna make that a hashtag. Sorry, whatever. You know what I'm saying.
But
anyway, like he's always being the role of dad. Like, right, I gotta do my best for my kids. So he never opened up the emotion and his fears and what he was missing and wanting.
Yeah.
And I only saw that after he was gone, unfortunately. So yeah. I got to go through the pages of my mom. Then goes, oh, like, you know, well, he had all these hopes, fears, and wishes, and dreams and stuff. And I go, fuck. You know, you want that conversation. So if you worth that, dude.
It
for
was.
Real. That's priceless.
You know, the Olympics, I mean, obviously, a lot of people that are doing weightlifting, you know, that seems like the pinnacle of your life would be the Olympics. But getting to say that to your dad, to me, was the pinnacle. You know, being able to say, you did your job. And so he could go out thinking,
smiling, you know.
Cool.
He
was a great dad. I look back, I used to think, and here's something for your listeners to think about. My dad was real chill. He would go work his job, come home, cut wood, do whatever around the house, but lived a super chill life, you know, and never had any worries, no stress. And I used to think, you know, why aren't you more aggressive? Like, my mother is very aggressive, owns her own business, you know.
Is that why they worked? They balanced?
Well, it didn't work. See, that's it.
How bad is my memory?
Yeah.
You just said that all 5 minutes ago.
Yeah. I had to break up the intense moment with a weird off-put.
Yeah, my mom needed, you know, she's very A-type, and the dudes that she was, you know, found more appealing were, you know, like big time entrepreneurs. And so my dad was nothing like that. So the poor guy never had a shot with my mother, you know. And so, but I look back and I think, you know, who had it right and who had
it wrong? It's called silent, bro.
Sorry, bro.
You got in trouble. So even when, you know, and I'm very A-type, obviously. So even in this life of A-type, go, 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 there should be times we all should find for defragging, as you said, Mike.
Yeah.
So.
There. Not unfragging.
Not on this show. Previous conversation. Travis and I met a couple weeks ago at the American Open. We had some really nice, deep conversations at the party that night. Talked about defragging, kind of taking time to yourself to get all the stuff in your life behind you so that you can move forward.
Right. Yeah. So we used to have a lot of meetings here, at, you know, where people shoot out 1,000 ideas, and that was the most unproductive thing ever. Because we never would stop to say, all right, let's pick these and attack them, you know. And so we never defragged. But now we've kind of like roped that in. And so now we pick something, we target it and conquer it, and then move forward. But
they say less is more.
Who is they?
They do say that.
Who is they?
speaking of less is more. So in all your years of experience, like what were like the one or two key things that like really led to your success? Where for all the people that are brand new to training that really need to focus on just a few things, like what suggestions would you give those people?
Oh, it would be easy. It would be like finding the right group to train with. You know, no matter what, whether it's weightlifting or powerlifting. Like finding the right group and like, you know, not being afraid to go train with people that are going to beat you. But you know what I did is I targeted those people. Like in North Carolina, when I came back to powerlifting, I would target people. Like there was a guy named Grant Bitts. He was this super heavyweight.
You know what I'm talking about? Fucking huge.
Like huge. 25-inch, not fat arms, like beast.
Yeah.
Wow. So I would literally go train with him. He was a jerk too, and like, but I was, you know, like, and I was a rookie at that time because I'd moved back to, you know, to North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So there was not a lot of weightlifting, and there was no, there wasn't CrossFit, and so you didn't have all these opportunities. You guys who go to CrossFit, consider yourself lucky. Because, mm-hmm. you know, we didn't have those opportunities. So I started powerlifting. Any gym, you can squat, bench, and deadlift. So I would seek this guy, Grant Pitts out. Mm-hmm. He was such a jerk, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to put up with his mouth until I can beat him. And so there came a time where I could beat him, and then I was done with his mouth, you know.
Yeah. Who was his coach? He trained under that guy. They used to have articles in Powerlifting USA all the time.
Oh, yeah. Tamara Grimwood. Her husband. Yeah.
Grimwood.
She died. I think she killed herself, but.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
They were crazy. The whole crew was crazy.
Yeah,
and I had to put up with that dude.
The cocktails weren't helping the situation, probably.
No,
because Grant was. You don't look at a guy like Grant Pitts and go, Google it, folks. You don't look at that guy and go, man, he takes all his fish oil, doesn't he? You're so fucked. That doesn't come to your mind, man.
No, dude.
So for the sake of, let me make 2.1. What were your best lifts? Just for, I don't think we mentioned that in powerlifting.
Well, in powerlifting, I had a competition 970 squat. 704 bench and an 804 deadlift.
For some reason, I don't think
body weight? At a 220, right?
220.
220.
Oh, I don't think your bench was that high. Yeah. Yeah, so that's,
do you know anyone that's 220 pounds and lifts that much weight?
Ed Cohen.
No. I'm talking about people at home, in their home gym.
Your buddy. Your buddy doesn't do that shit.
I want to make that point because, like, here's why you should also take this advice really close to heart because it's a good lift to tell on you. My second point was, do you think, to that point about getting to where the good lifters are, wouldn't you agree? I'm kind of begging a question a bit, but do you think that was way more important than any specific program you pursued?
Yeah.
The belief is really where it's at.
Yeah.
Don't people overvalue programming?
Yes. And you know, my programming was simply go heavy all the time. That's all I did. You know, I would say I was West Side, but at the end of the day, I never did a true dynamic workout. It was always, you know, I would do the speed bench with the bands, and I'd always be like, put more weight on. Until I was maxing out with bands.
Aren't I a powerlifter? Who's lifting heavy? But I say it's not necessarily sustainable, but if you want that, you want to go beyond yourself and reach new heights, you got to be where those people are.
That's all.
And this by osmosis, you rise to a level.
Right.
You can't keep it up for long, maybe, but you can. That's how you get there.
A big piece of what I did, too, is I would write over 100 different goals that I planned on breaking during the training cycle. And I was OCD. And so I realized.
Way to prioritize.
Yeah, so much for less is more. So
I don't do this. I'm not good.
But let me give you an example. Like, you know, max off a 3 board, max off a 2 board, you know, like the chain squat.
Like, I mean, all kinds of special exercises.
I definitely believed in that with Louis. And then so I realized if I would break 70% of those, I would be unbeatable. You know, and it was true. I don't know if anyone else has ever done that, but like, I really, if I broke most of those goals at that point in my life, there was no way, no one could beat me.
You're trying to break one of those once a week? How did that work?
All the time. So that's why dynamic, you know, dynamic days never ended up dynamic.
Because you're always trying to break a record on your dynamic days?
It kept that way for me too, man. I got to where I would do like a heavy squat or whatever on day one, and I realized that you get good results just by squatting heavier more often.
I squat
it's so funny, man.
And I slowly took off all the bands. You know, I only use bands occasionally because I think really the only benefit to them is that they make things fun. It's a fun change if
that
you're tired of squatting.
You pick up
a textbook and you know you got. I mean, I overthink program design myself all the time, and I mean, I think that's a thing. And you know, when we talk to the best athletes in the world, they may be doing dynamic days, but they're not. They're not thinking. They're not overthinking the dynamic day.
Well, everything,
not,
should, yeah. everything with a barbell.
They're not overanalyzing. Yeah. It's interesting.
I feel like people swing back and forth between programming doesn't really matter when they're first starting. To it matters a lot.
It's the only thing.
Back to it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah. That's my experience. Like every good lifter.
It's a pendulum.
Every lifter. Not pendulum. Not good, but
right.
The pendulum is swinging. Always swinging.
Right.
Getting programming is what you need to.
It goes.
You just need to work hard and just.
Maybe it's the same when everybody's life peered across the board. Like, there's this acceleration, and you think, I need more and more and more and more, and you get some of this stuff, and you realize, well, fuck.
I need less.
I either go on with this, or I go backwards. And you go backwards, you realize, okay, back to starting point, that's where I wanted to be. And then you die with a smile on my face.
The philosopher over here.
For sure.
I totally agree with that. You know, when we just started just getting bare bones, just lifting heavy, I mean, that's what worked.
What would a typical day in the gym look like for you?
Powerlifting or weightlifting?
Let's do both. All right. Powerlifting first.
Powerlifting would be, you know, typical day, like a squat day would be, you know, I would do use bands, but at the end of it, it would end up maxing out either with bands or I'd take the bands off. So I would do the speed stuff.
Were you box squatting or?
No, I did box squatting a couple times and ended up of my entire career, the only thing that ever hurt my back was box squats.
Oh, really?
Really?
So, I mean,
it wasn't for you.
It wasn't for me. I'm not, obviously I'm a Louis Simmons fan, so I'm not knocking Louis.
As we are too, yeah.
Yeah.
Were you trying to get a lot of variety, like different band tension every day, different bars, different width different stances?
Yeah, but then the closer the meet came, the more specific I would be. Like, then it would be a squat bar.
Did you learn that in school?
No.
The school of hard knocks, man. Well,
in school, I learned like basics. Anatomy and kinesiology is about all I really apply.
Sure.
But, otherwise I learned from traveling, meeting these people, like you guys do, like traveling to Louis.
It's the best educational model, man.
Yes. I didn't learn shit about lifting in school.
No.
Not about the actual lifting part of it.
Because you can't. Right. I mean, what's a 200-pound washed up guy, all he does is talk about training, hasn't really trained until, I'm being a little aggressive, I'm sorry, but in the classroom, man, there was never really anything that I could take out and really get. The exception would be when I went to school with guys like Brian Schilling and Dr. Lauren Chu.
Yeah.
But these guys were training for weightlifting full speed and researching all the shit.
Now that's perfect right there.
Yeah, that's a good combination. That's rare. So most of the time it's the guy who's like, don't lift so much. Like, also what's really important is endurance training. Like, oh, fuck this guy.
Yeah, none of the learning happened in class though. It was training, doing actual weightlifting with Schilling that really slingshotted us forward.
Yeah, I learned about weightlifting at school, just not in a classroom.
But after school was over.
When the classes were over, we all met up and trained with Schilling.
Yeah, that's we were awesome. Doing things like we'd all train like at 3, 4, 5, whatever it was, work in a lab all morning, take a break, train, work in a lab all evening. But like we're in there, like you do a lift, stop, talk research, talk science, talk real application of some study you're thinking and go,
oh yeah,
yeah, maybe that works, and go back to lifting hard. Like it was really integrated in everything you were doing.
Right.
All right, so we didn't actually get a day in the we gotta get
off,
back.
Off track.
So like a squat day, and then I would end up with reverse hypers, glute hands. I did a lot of posterior chain work. Mm-hmm. I still do my weightlifters. We have several glute hams in there. And so, and then I would do a lot of single leg work too, just to, I didn't want to get any imbalances. So I would do, lunges or like, rear leg elevated, squats. It
took me years to find the value in single leg work.
It's boring, man.
It's only after repeated injuries. It's like, oh.
Yeah, it's a break from the barbell.
That's a good idea.
let's try not to get hurt. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then a bench day would be like, on a dynamic day, it would start with bands, speed, like a minute between sets, working up heavy. Mm-hmm. On a max ever day, it would be like, I had to use a lot of boards on bench. Mm-hmm. I will say that. But I always ended up with a rep to my chest heavy. Mm-hmm. So I never just did a 2-board or a 3-board. It always ended up being a full rep.
You feel like that saved your shoulders over time?
Yeah,
using the boards?
I don't know.
No, really?
I think full range of motion is actually better for you. Mm-hmm. I think what really ended up hurting my shoulders was doing the crazy bands. That was the one thing in my career I wish I would have chilled out on.
Mm-hmm. You did a lot of crazy bands?
Oh, man. I went up, this is a true story.
You're going to start selling them like that. Crazy bands.
Green bands. I would double a green band and do a real green band, not a mini.
Yeah, an average band.
Yeah.
You would double that over the bench.
I would double it and then do benches with that. And it was insane.
The most I ever did.
How much tension is that like with no weight on the bar?
Like, I used to
be a couple
that.
Hundred pounds.
I would do my board presses with maybe like 200 to 300 pounds on the bar, and I would use a light band doubled.
Right.
And that was like an extra 250 pounds of band tension.
Yeah.
And it's really extreme because you take that thing off. Now you're taking the exercise. Yeah. Yeah. You're taking the one exercise you can die on and making it four times as deadly because now it's like fucking guillotine.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
Band tension guillotine with all this weight in your hand. You can die.
Yeah. That would be the one, even though it skyrocketed my bench, it did do that. It shot it up. But looking back, I could have like, I think we all have genetic potential, and you're going to reach it. It's how quick you reach it. So I could have still reached that potential without getting hurt if I would have just been more patient and not.
The patience game. Yeah. Nobody has it.
I don't have it at all.
So what about weightlifting? What did your weightlifting workouts look like?
In Colorado.
And how long were you in Colorado Springs doing that before you transitioned to powerlifting?
Not even quite a year because I had to, maybe a year at the OTC.
So you didn't weightlift very long.
No, I only weightlifted, from, the end of 1996 to, 1999, like, right before they really started training for 2000, but.
Okay.
And then I moved back. But a typical day of weightlifting would be, we did a lot of percentage work back then. We didn't do Bulgarian very much. Mm. And so, but we would squat heavy, there was a lot more, assistants work, I think, than they do necessarily, it seemed like, nowadays. Or like with, say, Glenn Finlay. You know, we did lots of pull. We did pulls.
It depends. Yeah, it depends on what school you're at. Who's your coach?
Right.
Some coaches are, you know, very Bulgarian-ish. Right. And there's definitely some coaches that are very Russian.
I would lean towards like what Kyle, you know, like at Streetport. They do lots of like strength training.
It's almost bodybuilderish over there.
It really is. Yeah. And those dudes look it, but they look cool too. Let's be serious. When you're at the beach, you want to look cool, right?
Yeah, I wish I would have done more of Pierce's program when I was younger. I would be much more jacked today, I'm sure of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like John just looks like a good athlete, you know. But yeah, when you look at Kim, you're like, wow. That
Brick
a beast.
You look at him and go, Brick shit house.
Right.
Brick fucking shit house.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
but you know, it would just be like we did lots of assistance, and then when we were within 6 weeks of a competition that was like called the Red Zone by Jagomir, and then we were given the green light at any time to go heavy. So
just anytime you felt good, just go for it.
Anytime.
Just to dial in your nervous system and hit it. Yeah.
And certain people would use that, and certain people wouldn't. Like Pete Kelly, you know, the Olympian, he would always stick to the percentages to the T. Shane Hammonds would normally stick to the percentages to the T. And I was an idiot, and I would always, red zone to me meant maxed out every day, whether I felt it or not, you know? And so I think the ones who stuck to the percentages more closely did better. So
did you ever train with Shane?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's who was there. I was with Shane.
Yeah, he was there, I guess. Yeah.
You podcasted with him the other day.
Yeah, we podcasted with him. Yeah.
Like, Shane was so
amazing.
If
you don't know, Travis Mash is on with John North on the Weightlifting Talk. So if you want to hear more of Travis, go to Weightlifting Talk.
Yes.
So. And you had Shane Hammond on the other day?
We did.
Is that what you said?
Yeah. So we're friends because we powerlifted. You know when I told you I powerlifted first? We powerlifted together. You know,
oh, really? Right
back. Yeah, he was a beast.
So you powerlifted with him and then went and did weightlifting and then came back?
His junior IPF record may still stand.
I'm sure. 1,008.
1,008 or 1,013 or something. Mm-hmm.
It was 1,008.
1,008. Junior squat, right? Junior super heavy squat. Yes. Single ply or was that
single ply, man?
Single ply briefs, high bar, US.
It was no briefs.
No briefs.
It was single ply suit that he was not even tight. He could put his own straps on. I saw it.
There's no doubt about his strength. So then what's really impressive about him, man, somebody posted his highlight reel. Somebody made a video of his best lifts in like from 2004 to maybe two to four in that range. Mm-hmm. Dude, he was doing easy cleaning jerks like 250.
Yeah,
or at least in training, he was doing good. He was so to spend all that time weightlifting and to be such an athlete to make a or powerlifting and make a good run at weightlifting, get close to actually like making a run at like you know getting in a top five or something or top 10.
He was close. He got seventh. You know, it was his highest. But I think if we could have started a guy like you know Shane early, you've got a medalist.
That's your Rezaza day. Yeah. U.S. Rezaza day.
Oh yeah,
you've got a medalist. I mean, a guy like him doesn't need steroids to be strong. He is strong. Period.
He can dunk a basketball too, right?
5'9", I think he is 5'9" or 10", 380 pounds.
I didn't realize he wasn't that tall.
He's not.
Like I feel like when I look at him on my computer, I was like, oh, that guy's got to be bigger.
Round.
Yeah, the first time I saw him at the Arnold, he walked by me and he just walks by like this tall, and I was like, holy shit,
he's crazy.
He looks way bigger on film.
Yeah, it's because usually the camera's down here and the stage is up there.
I say round, that's endearing. I wouldn't call that guy fat. I mean, look at his legs. You're like, his legs are, and from a muscular perspective, as wide as they are tall.
Yeah,
it seems. His fucking quadriceps looked like the
basketball.
He looked like a little bit of a chubbier version of that that cow they fucked with its genetics to make the myostatin gene down regulator, whatever it is. He looks like that. He looked like that.
I want to know when they're gonna get that for me. I want them to fuck with that myostatin gene.
It'll be wasted on you.
Would
you volunteer for that study?
No.
Not now. Maybe 10 years ago.
ten years ago, I would have done anything.
Yeah. So, did you guys hear
blow a dude for gas money 10 years ago, wouldn't you?
Did y'all hear the story he was talking, Shane? He made me feel so... not many people on earth. It made me feel so inferior as Shane Hammonds was talking about doing. It was 793 pounds. He did it 10 times back squat.
He said
it felt so easy. It felt like I keep going maybe 20 times.
I'm
like,
what?
What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
The only thing more impressive than that maybe is what just recently happened. The Russian who got caught on depth, but he took a raw squat attempt at like 1,003 at Melanchev or whatever.
Whoa.
Yeah, a raw belt knee wraps.
Talk about my stat.
And look, he goes down, bounces, and shoots up.
What?
And I go, you could have just taken that 1 inch deeper and gotten 3 whites, a raw 1,000 pound squat, which maybe Shane could have done that too in his prime. But you're talking about strength that is, you're talking about like Hercules shit.
Yeah, these dudes are like, I think Shane could have easily taken, you know, in his prime. Remember, he was a 23-year-old kid, and so true strength doesn't, you know, tap out till way after that. Literally, I was at my strongest till I was in my 30s. So if he could have gone back in his 30s and just went for, you know, powerlifting, you're talking about easily over 1,000 pounds.
How old were you when you peaked on your strength?
I was 33.
All right, so one more year, and I can.
But then it was a steep decline. Like I was, you know, 33, I was set, and by 35 and a half or 36, it was a huge cliff.
Well, damn, now you're making me.
Oh,
now,
shit. Now, we're staring down the cliff, Travis.
Shit.
Yeah.
Two more years, and I'm done.
It's like a it's like a steepest roller coaster of your life, man. You go, oh, I'm so strong.
Nope. All right, interview's over. All right, so I'm thoroughly depressed.
Yeah.
No, what was it?
Let's take a break real quick. When we come back, Travis is going to tell you about what the bar taught him about life.
Perfect.
And we're back.
All right.
You're listening to Barbell Shrug, or maybe you're watching it. Maybe both.
Not watching without listening.
Maybe you got your ears, your earplugs in, and you're just watching us move.
I'm sure it happens.
You really believe that people just watch it and don't listen to the words?
I mean, look at this face. Come on now.
Good point. Yeah. My fault. Yeah.
All right, Travis, when we were at the American Open.
Yes.
We got in some really good conversation about.
Deep.
Yes, it was very deep. We had a good time.
Yeah.
And you were talking about what the bar taught you about life.
Right. Well, you asked me the question, you're like, if I had 45 minutes to deliver exactly what I wanted to the exact people I wanted to deliver.
She had one
to.
Shot.
One shot. And it freaked me out for some reason. Instantly, I'm like, and then it just came to me is like, you know, what, you know, the barbell, I really believe, teaches us, you know, who we are. Like, you know, are you fearless? Are you going to go under it? Let's say you don't go under it. Will you try it again? You miss it this day. Will you try it the next day? Will you just quit? Like, it will teach you who you're about to be. You know, will you drive thousands of miles away with, you know, who knows what's going to happen at the end with $200 in your pocket? Mm-hmm. You know, it taught me a lot about, you know, who I was to become and, like, the business person, the husband, you know, the father. It taught me all of that, yeah.
So, shit, I forgot I was going to ask.
Well, I was going to say also, I think another thing I would say is when you do get under fearlessly and you do have a good lift, that also exposes, because some people, that builds the wrong kind of qualities. They take that confidence and they start getting a little cocky. They abuse the barbell. Their relationship starts going the other way. They don't really appreciate what it teaches them.
You know, there's a period in my life too that where I definitely like let that get to my brain, like, you know, arrogance. And so, but then I think the barbell, you know, I got hurt. And so it taught me, chill out. You know, you're not that cool.
The big moment in my life came when I realized, you know, holy shit, I am not in a competition with the barbell, because that's stupid, because the barbell, it's kind of like the world. I mean, if you want to rise up against it, it will always be bigger than you.
Yeah.
It's not there to be defeated. It's not something you slam and scream at.
Right.
Necessarily. Not that it's fun to go, yeah, I fucking nail that. And you do it respectfully, John. I'm not saying John is like an asshole for slam bars. Yeah. I'm saying I grew up in a world where the gym was fostering animosity and anger and competitive nature between people, and people were as friends. Like, we had to destroy the barbell. We had to talk shit to each other. And I realized it's one way of doing it. Or you can just realize the barbell is your greatest friend and unrelenting. Like, it's a teacher that will never leave you. It's there. It always calibrates you. It's a calibration tool. It's not something to be defeated, because you can't defeat it.
What were you guys saying? You talked about as far as like how you lift is like a good indicator of how you are in every aspect of life. You can tell who's kind of wild and who's like very conservative, and it all comes out on the platform.
Yeah, when he threw that out at me, I actually thought about mine and Doug's lifting styles. And even though we were lifting in the same gym, same coach, and we lifted side by side every day, when we showed up at a competition, our attempts were very different. So Doug would probably not attempt something in a competition that he hadn't hit in the gym.
Right.
And I would feel like I left something out on the floor if I didn't go for a PR.
Me too.
And so, like, you know, for me, like, my first lift is like something I can hit in training. Second lift is what I my best I've ever done, and then the third lift is
go for broke.
Yeah, like yeah. let's fucking crush something. So like,
in all fairness, though, was Doug more successful than you, Doug?
Well, that's
can
the
you comment
thing.
On how many what strategy in your view was the best?
I actually think I opened too light. I think it worked against me because I was super consistent training all the time. I fucking never missed lifts. Like right. if it was something that I knew I could hit every time. I never like accidentally dropped 95%. It wouldn't happen. It was either I was trying to hit a PR and it was 100%, and I would maybe miss it like part of the time. And if I went up for 101, you know, I'd probably get it. Like if it was like right there at the brink of my ability, then maybe I drop it. But if it's 98% or below, no chance I'm dropping it. Oh, but perfect. Then in competition, if I get a little nervous and I go, oh, I'm going to open it at like 95% or like 94%, I would always throw it over my head, snatching my opener on snatches. Right. I missed that in competition a couple times, like lifts that I never missed in practice. So I think opening too light actually worked against me specifically because it would be too light and I'd fucking over pull.
I think you got to just do what's right for you though. But that tells me like, so in life, Doug has been a little more methodical and conservative, and that's been good for him. And
it's good for you.
It's good for me. He's a business partner and friend, so he's good for me, who's a little more wild and ready to jump 2 feet in and want to hit PRs in life.
Right.
Yeah, Andy's more like you too. I remember Andy, he hit a PR on his second lift one time, and then he goes, I think he hit like a 102 on a snatch, something like that. Andy weighs like 155 or so.
Yeah, he's a 69 kilo lifter.
Right.
Yeah, and so he hit a PR like 102 or something like that, and he goes, what do you think I should hit? And I was like, 104? And he's like, put 112 on the bar. I was like, what are you talking about?
Missed, right? He missed that.
He did miss it. But that's just Andy's style. He's like, fuck it. I'm going to go big and just see what happens.
Did he Clark it?
What's that?
He just made it to the hips.
I don't remember what happened, but
that's when he basically
it was actually much closer than I thought it was going to be.
And Andy's one of the most aggressive athletes I've ever met. You would know if you talked to him in daily life, but he's very professional in a professional environment. But as soon as you get him out of that, he's a little nutty, man.
Me too.
Don't take that guy to Vegas unless you want to have a hangover. That's for sure.
The advantage of that strategy. The advantage of that strategy is you go home and tell your buddies, how'd the meet go? Well, I hit solid opener. Second was good. Went for a big third, but missed it. If I would have made it, though, would have fucking won. Yeah. You go for something you never would have got.
I was always, unless the bar, could potentially hurt me or kill me, I wasn't even alive.
I
never even took it seriously. It was right where, like in powerlifting, when the bar was inching close to 1,000 is when I was the most alive.
And capable of killing you.
Yes. And then that's what got me going. Like, it's that fear thing, like jumping off a cliff. We talked about cliff diving or skydiving.
That is what's not in weightlifting, right? Like weightlifting is beautiful in so many awesome ways. Right. But I guess that one thing I still like about powerlifting is it's so extreme.
It is extreme. Well, look at weightlifting though. When you're throwing 300 plus pounds over your head, if it drops in your head, it could kill you. I love that.
But I remember that feeling.
I got a good video of that happened to me.
with
289. It's on YouTube if you want to hit it.
Hit me
right on the top of the head.
Awesome.
But I remember those days of like.
Then I went out and got it. A minute late.
I just remember those days like you slam a couple of Ephedra because that was the thing to do, man.
Ephedra.
You strap on that squat suit. You strap on the belt. The wraps are tight. Your blood pressure is spiking. You unrack. Anything over 900 pounds, it's just such a different kind of feeling, man.
It is.
It's so extreme. And you go in the bottom of the hole and your head's going to pop. You stand up and you don't even know what happened and you get white lights. It's a certain kind of addiction.
I love it. There was a time, it was at 2003 where I was squatting. It was in the nines. And on the way down, I felt something rip. And I thought it was just my suit had ripped a little bit.
Yeah.
No problem. So I got to the bottom of the squat and went to push up. And I immediately realized that was my leg that had ripped. Yeah. It was my quad that had ripped. And look, it took, I'm sure it was only a few seconds, but it really seemed like an eternity for them to get, because there was no helping. My quad was torn.
There's nowhere to go when you got that happening.
No, dude. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was like 9:30 on my back.
So there's no chance of you going up. They had to come save you?
There was no pushing.
There's nothing you can do.
There's no contractile.
That's too much weight.
Thing happening in your leg.
No. You can't just scoop him back in the rack casually.
I thought it was going to be some miraculous story where he was like, but I didn't give a shit. I stood up anyway. He was like, no chance.
I couldn't
That's what I meant to say. Yeah, my quad tore off and I still got it.
Yeah. No. So fuck you.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I do what I want, right? But yeah, it did not, you know, but but the next time that I went to that same weight when my leg healed was just like the best feeling in the world. It was like, here we go again. Let's try this one more time. You know what I mean? Like,
it's a sick dance we dance.
It is a sick dance, but it taught me I'm that way in life. Like, you know, I take risks in business, you know, and I'm not afraid. Actually, I think, but luckily my wife is more like you are, you know, like she's conservative. So I'll be risky and she'll bring me down. And we meet in the middle. You know, if it were up to me, I would be like, let's just go big, you know?
Yeah.
Chips all in. Mm-hmm. But she'll be like, let's put half the chips in. You know what I mean? Like,
I guess.
We save some of those chips.
Yeah, I've been like legitimately like injured by a barbell where Doug, I mean, he did have that one hit his head, but like, I don't know. Have you had any like major, like mess up a knee or a hamstring or a hip? Yeah, injury from
probably constantly my whole life. For like 15, I can't remember the last time I wasn't injured in the last 15 years.
Being conservative didn't help you out.
I think that's why I was so conservative, because I was fucking hurt all the time.
Always in pain.
Yeah. My friend that I was
fighting doesn't help. Well, I don't know if it was barbell or not. But
I would say maybe the fighting is what made you hurt, and the barbell just compounded that.
You took a hard road.
Which sport did you like the most? Not that we're interviewing you, but
fighting.
You did.
It's the most fun.
Yeah.
If you're winning, it's the most fun.
Yeah. So like,
I didn't like it because I got punched in the face a lot.
That part fucking blows.
When you got beat, how was that?
When I got beat, I didn't get beat up. I just lost the fight.
Yeah, so that's all right.
Well, I mean, I don't know what all right means, but it wasn't fun. It was depressing, but I didn't walk out hurt.
Right.
I got submitted and I got in a bad spot and he was cranking my surgery shoulder and
couldn't do that.
I literally almost tapped out before it started hurting, because I was like, I do not want another fucking surgery.
Right.
I almost didn't take that fight because I was hurt, very hurt going in, and I was like, I don't know if I want to do this.
Right.
I already got neck pain and shoulder pain and elbow pain and back pain and knee pain. I was fucked up when I started that fight.
Yeah, that's a bad decision. Yeah.
I was in a bad spot leading up to that fight. Like, I wasn't thinking about winning. I was hoping that I wasn't going to go to the hospital afterward.
Oh yeah,
and so
that's the wrong mentality.
It was a bad mentality.
Whether it be weightlifting or fighting or whatever, you can't be like that. You can't be like trying to survive it. That's when you get really hurt.
So. Yeah, I almost dropped out twice. My shoulder was getting cranked, and I was like, I'm done for. Done.
Have you ever been beaten up? Like big time?
Not really, really bad, but definitely like a little bit all the time, but never like hospitalized from getting beat up. I had my hip dislocated that one time, but I didn't feel beat up.
That was a shocking thing to witness.
Jeez.
Oh, you saw that?
Yeah.
Well, you bounced back from it.
He was there.
He was there. I just remember seeing like the after effects and like, you did what?
Oh, did you scream?
When it happened,
no,
I was screaming, stop, 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 because I could feel it being tore out. I was screaming, stop, 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 and I land on the ground. I was just like, fuck, fetal position, and I couldn't move at all. I couldn't roll my back. I couldn't roll over. I couldn't do anything.
If I was by myself
in the woods, I probably would have died.
Yeah, I could tell that he was in so much pain that like he was about to pass out. I was like, I could just tell by the look on his face. I was like,
was it a toss?
He's going to pass out from pain.
A toss or something, you landed on
and,
your hip.
I wonder if your listeners know that they're talking about his hip getting ripped out of joint.
Yeah, that's the femur. That's the femur coming like out.
That's not a common thing.
Out of here.
That's not common.
No, it usually happens in car accidents.
Because like, it takes so much force.
Yeah. And
is it a car accident or, you know, trauma incident, or under surgery where a surgeon's, you know, opening up all the tissues, releasing, then manually releasing the joint?
Or like Bo Jackson. I mean, isn't that what really happened to him?
NFL
game.
He just hit perfect, and there goes his hip.
Yeah.
The strongest guys in the world running as fast as they could.
But
was he dysplastic? He have a hip dysplasia, Bo? He had both hips replaced, I think.
I don't know.
I work in that sector. I think I remember hearing that, but God, that guy's a laughing fuck.
But yeah, getting to the point where like I got beat up so bad that I got cuts all over my face and two black eyes and whatnot. I definitely had black eyes, busted up nose, stuff like that, but never like so beat up where like... Or like my whole face is just destroyed.
And you don't have cauliflower ears either. You're still pretty handsome, Doug.
I got lucky on the cauliflower ears. I wrestled for 10 or 15 years now, and I got nothing.
Yeah. I don't know how that doesn't happen.
You guys know, Randy Couture?
I started training MMA at his gym in Oregon. That's how I first started.
I know him. I met him in Colorado Springs. Yeah. You know, he was obviously an Olympic caliber wrestler.
That's right.
And he was out there, and I met him. This is the greatest story. So we go out to this bar in Colorado Springs. Called the Ritz. It's real busy, and he looks like not human. You met him?
Yeah, we've all met him.
Like his head kind of looks like maybe he's not human, like, you know, like a
Cro-Magnon or something.
Right. So, you know, we're in there, we're starting to have a few drinks, and I'm like, dude, show me something. That's when he just got in MMA. Like he was already like on the scene, and like within like maybe a second, like I was fading out. Like
he put me
I was like, come on, man, you know, show me some stuff. And like he put me some kind of
he neutralized you.
He put me in some kind of headlock, and within seconds, I'm like, I knew to tap. You know,
it just made sense.
Oh man,
and it's so casual. And what's really scary is with him. You realize he's a kind guy. He's just showing me something. And
it hurts.
But if I made him mad, if he needed to attack me, I stand no chance under any circumstances.
No chance. Dude.
No.
Under no circumstance. Even if I had a bat.
He's a big guy. He's not small.
No.
Like when you look at him, he's just like, he could just run me over.
Yeah. And his hands.
I mean, he's a world-class wrestler, world-class fighter. You think about a guy who's a world-class powerlifter, powerlifting against a guy who's never powerlifted before.
Right.
There's no chance.
You can't compete. Yeah.
The strength that they have, you fighters. I mean, I know we're kind of going to a different place, but
we're going there.
Like the grip strength, the special strengths that fighters have, I find fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, do you guys think it can be trained? When a wrestler grabs your wrist and it feels like you're going to snap, you know, your radius and ulna are going to snap in half. What is that?
It's the most functional man strength I know of. Stop you from doing
our friend, Dr. Andy Galpin, he's been doing some tests with some UFC fighters at Cal State Fullerton and with Ryan Parsons. And that's one of the things they're testing. They have, like, you know, they're testing some like cardio type tests, and they have like grip strength. But grip strength's one of the big ones. And, you know, some of those guys, he sent us some numbers, and it was
phenomenal.
Extremely impressive. And then there was actually a couple guys where I was a little surprised that their numbers weren't bigger.
But they have heavy hands.
They have like cardio of a Olympic cyclist or something. Right. So it's kind of a...
That's the interesting thing with some fighters, like what you're talking about. Like they feel so strong, but then when you put them in the weight room, they don't look weightlifting strong or powerlifting strong.
Yeah.
But then if you go wrestle with them, they'll just fucking toss you around.
They make you feel so weak. So I wonder if there's any correlation with like grip strength.
I think there is.
Yeah,
sure.
Like if someone has this amazing, crazy grip strength that no one can explain, are they more apt to be like a George St. Pierre?
Mm-hmm.
Or
I think they've actually done studies on that specifically, on grip strength and fighting success.
That's why they're testing it.
Right.
It's because they're trying to help these UFC fighters shore up their weaknesses. So this one guy might have killer cardio, but his grip strength's lacking, so he doesn't really need to go run miles and miles and miles. He needs to work on his grip strength. And, you know, maybe do some deadlifts. And then the other guy who has incredible grip strength, you know, he tends to gas out fairly quickly. He's like, well, this guy really doesn't need to work on. This guy loves to deadlift twice a week. This guy needs to be out there, doing the stair climber or something. You know,
even the fighting. I think you'll learn like who you are. Like in the, you know, you could even go beyond the barbell. You could be like whatever you compete at. It's like what kind of personality that you display in that sport is who you're going to be. And you know what you need to do, like, you know, Mike and I, just embrace it and surround yourself with opposite personalities. And so, like, you know, you're kind of more conservative. Well, perfect. Well, operations is going to be your thing. I love it. I learned, I think at the American Open, I learned more that weekend than probably my entire life from talking to two people. Like, it'd be Mike and it would be talking to Christmas, like Abbott.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, it was just phenomenal. And, you know, the conversations that Mike and I had were like, it made me actually think and rethink who I am and like where I want to go. And so,
holy shit,
a big statement.
Yeah. So, but
don't talk to me, anybody.
It really, like,
it's a lot of pressure now.
But like, we were having lunch, and you know, I was just like, it was cool. I knew he was Barbell Shrugged, and I was just eating, and then he started talking, you know, and I started listening. And then before I knew it, I was done. I put my utensils down and started listening, and we started talking. I was done eating. God was like, this dude has got something to say to the world, I think, you know. And it really, you know, I mean,
Not
your ego's going to be
unquenchable.
But like, look at that smile on his face. He's like, you're right.
We all love him.
The way that he thinks and talks, you know, the way he makes you like kind of look deep into who you are, and like, you know, don't just get caught up in the daily activities of what you're doing. Like, really rethink, like, who you are, where you want to go, you know, like, is this where you want to be, you know? And that's the kind of conversations that we had. So
what you want to do in the world. Like, you're always talking about it's kind of a crazy thing for most people to talk about changing the world, but
yes.
Well, that's something you talk about all the time, like providing enough value to the world where you change the world and the way people think, like on a global scale. And that's, yes. That's not a normal thing for most regular people, mouth breathers, as Chris Moore calls them.
I got that from Uncle Henry. Henry Rollins refers to people as like, hey, you're going through someone. There's people, you know, all you hear is the mouth breathing, man. Some people just don't get it. I'm paraphrasing, but that's a real thing.
Like they have nothing to say.
Well, yeah, there's like, there's people who are, I've come to see it as, you know, in a Socratic sense. Sorry to throw out a word that makes me sound smart in reference to Socrates. But
he's not that smart.
Socrates
folks.
Is like, point of view comes down to like your head is above or below the fray. Below, you think all the things like which program's the best? Is weightlifting better than CrossFit or vice versa? Politics, red versus blue, all this fucking bullshit is all illusion. And sooner or later, you wake up and go, I'm just being fucking misled on every front. And all these conversations that even seem real are completely, you know, sugarcoating and off the fucking deep. They don't really matter. And you lift your head up and go, oh, there's all this world that I see the relationship. I see how everything ties together. I see how the way this song is written that makes it so great, the motivation, the passion behind the artist's work is what makes me a better fucking lifter. Everything's connected.
See, this makes me want to go hang out with you guys all the time. Like, I see how this dynamic works, man. Yeah, this guy, that was exactly. You know, when you can look up and say, you know, like society will start to lead you a certain way and be like, all right, this is what you should be shooting for. Like the house, the two kids, blah,
it's
blah,
all,
blah.
Well, the kids are great, but the big house. But a guy coming to a gym like this, like it looks in many ways like all the, you know, the rugged places where I grew up powerlifting stuff, but what's different is the feel.
Right.
And one thing you guys were talking about jujitsu and stuff, but one thing I was coming to, I've been thinking about a lot like of a year or so, is what does jujitsu teach you initially? You go in there raw, and what happens?
Right.
You go, I'm gonna fucking wrestle this guy.
Yeah.
And you go, and you struggle, and you're holding on this guy, and you're trying to submit him, and you realize you're all of a sudden you're wiped. And you're missing the whole point. This guy is casual, almost like in a way sleepy,
Black
relaxed,
Widow in you.
And instantly turns you into nothing. And I realized, holy shit, man, fucking lifting weights is no different than that. And like, I can be strong as shit, and we can have a good team. We can do that by having fun, encouraging each other, showing
that's
compassion,
key.
Enjoying ourselves, playing music that's not yelling and screaming. We can have a good fucking time and be a family in here, and that's what gets you strong.
That is, you know, I think at, you know, Mass Elite, that's exactly what we do, man. We, you know, we try to have a really good family atmosphere. We hang out. You know, we don't have, like, a lot of people, like, you know, trying to like battle to see who's the strongest. I joke around about being the 40-year-old that's stronger than everybody.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, my total goal is to make everybody here, you know, stronger than me. So I put my numbers
in all the ways that you can be strong.
In all the ways.
Yeah.
You know?
Not just with barbells.
Not just, I know. I want to raise my kids up. Like, you know, you saw Easy, you know, he's walking around, the black guy here.
Yeah.
Is it? Not that we're, you know, we'd like to get more diversity, but that's how what we have. And so
you're in a small town, North Carolina.
Small town, North Carolina, and that's what I get. You know? So, you know, I want to raise them upright and try not to make the same mistakes. Like, to be a world champion, you do not have to be a jerk to the world. You do not have to walk around like you're Billy, you know, badass. And you just got to, you know, what you should do. This is the point I'm trying to make, is when you get to that, you know, popularity or you're doing really well, is like say to yourself, now how can I affect the most people in the best way? How can I change the world? I look back and when I was winning all those competitions, you know, I was getting hundreds of emails every day, like, you know, how do I get my bench up, how do I get my squat up? And I had such an opportunity to affect people, you know, to make their lives better, and all I did was want to stroke my own ego over and over and over, and want to, you know, I would literally, this is terrible, I would literally go on the forums just to see what they were saying about me. And I wanted, if there's anything negative, I would get super pissed.
That's the route to suffering, man, in a very Buddhist sense. Like, you grasping for all that, holding on to that, not you, all of us.
Yes.
That's where the unhappiness and unsatisfaction comes from. And that's what keeps you pushing that shit into your 50 years old, and you go, wow, I don't have hips and shoulders anymore.
Absolutely.
I ground myself down to nothing over what?
Over what?
Shitty trophies?
What? But if you use it to affect lives, it's awesome. You know, if I would use the popularity to say, all right, now don't do these mistakes, or like here, you know, don't sacrifice your family, or don't, you know, leave your wife, or don't neglect your kids. If I had done that, you know, I could have changed lives. But
you can change lives now, man.
I can't.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that kind of
you know what the saying
the
is,
track
Travis?
You're on right now, then?
That's what I'm doing now.
Travis, on a hot day, you may have this thought. If you find yourself without shade, the best time to have planted a tree is 30 years ago. The next best time, right fucking now. Right?
You can do good right now. Right now, man.
I'm moving to Memphis, man. So, yeah. So, I mean, that is, I guess now we've gone full circle and you see, you know, what it's taught me. It's taught me, you know, the good and bad things about me. And it makes me aware of, you know, when I start to get that old self in me, I try to, like, you know, keep it down.
You do what you want and you want to do good.
Right.
Yeah, I think sometimes if you get those emails about how to get your bench or deadlift up, sometimes it's good to address that direct question that someone wants the answer to,
right,
and then give them also an answer they might need.
Yes.
They don't know that they need. And
that's what I do.
I think that's really important.
Yes. Yeah. I try to really answer all these questions. Like, it's so hard, you know, with you know, podcasting, you know, as you guys know, you get a few people that listen to you and want to learn more about things that you talk about. Mm-hmm. So I really do my best to answer all the Twitter and the Facebook and the, you know, the emails that I get. You know, not just with some short bullcrap answer. Mm-hmm. You know what he said the most too about, you know, really empathizing with people and trying to, you know, mm-hmm. care when I answer a question now instead of just giving them an answer and be like, here you go, is literally think about what I'm about to say to this human being, mm-hmm. and be like, you know, how can I affect them the most? Mm-hmm. And so that was the second other, that's the mm-hmm. maybe the best thing that he talked about, how when he learned about empathizing, and he wrote an article and I reposted it, but mm-hmm. about when you really care about what this person thinks and you really try to put yourself in their shoes, mm-hmm. well then not only are you changing their lives, but you are, that's the best way to get what you want out of life too, mm-hmm. because when you can go to bed at night and be like, man, I really affected lives, mm-hmm. well, what else do you want, you know?
Yeah.
So,
all right. So, we're gonna wrap this up.
We could go on for another five fucking hours.
I think we could. We'll have to do another episode for sure.
Yeah.
So, what do you want to promote? What's your Twitter? What's your website? If people want to learn more about you, where do they go?
Twitter at Mash Elite. My website is MashElitePerformance.com. MASH. Why do people misspell my name? Mash. Isn't that simple?
Yeah, it sounds easy.
How do they? What would you? How else would you spell it?
Marsh Nash. Anything but MashElitePerformance.com.
M-A-S-H.
And then, you know, listen to, if you get a chance, check out Weightlifting Talk. You know, I got to plug my man, John North, Attitude Nation.
Hell yeah.
AttitudeNation.com. There you go.
All right, guys. See you next time.
Cheers, friends.
Great time.